Savoy. Pages for All Ages offers a wide selection of books, compact discs, stationery, magazines, DVDs, children's books, and gift ideas, and features a full line of coffee drinks and teas at Pages Cafe. On the web at www.pagesforallages.com.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here on the program once again Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on this program once a month and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. And if you've heard the program before, you know the general idea here. It's kind of about troubleshooting. If you have a problem and you're not quite sure how to solve it, or you're thinking about, at this point, you're probably people are dedicated gardeners are probably already thinking about what they're going to do next year and what they would like to plant. And certainly if you had a problem this year, you don't want that problem to come back, or you're thinking, well, is there something I could do now? Is there something I should be doing in the spring to try to deal with that? So any and all of that could be problems. If you're interested in recommendations for particular plants, for example, I know sometimes Sandy's been able to do that. Someone's called and said, well, I'm looking for this kind of plant, and it's in this kind of spot, and is there something that you might think would be good for that? And she's generally come up with a few things. So any and all of that, houseplants too, whatever you want to talk about. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here once again. Yes, as we were just talking before we got going here, it's November. And in fact, before we know it, it's going to be December. It's a little deceptive because we've had for November some unusually mild weather. But I know it's going to come down with a crash on us one of these days, and it's really going to be we're going to know that it's fall, and then pretty soon we're going to know that it's winter.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of people want to sort of do things. You know, is it really okay to do it now? Move stuff, and you know, technically it's kind of late for a lot of things. But it's been so darn warm that I think people are kind of eluded into thinking that it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we have a couple of callers here. We will start right in. Someone on the campus, and this is line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
There on line number one. Oh, hold on. there we got you. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
And David. Last fall, I planted two really nice, you know, worked the ground and put in tulips, crocus, probably about six different kinds of spring bulbs, and they just were a beautiful show this spring.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was doing a little top dressing, I was walking around on it, and I noticed that the moles have rim-racked both beds. It's just all soft underfoot with their tunnels. Can I expect any of those bulbs to be there next spring?
Yeah, if it's moles, you know, the ones that sort of make the little mounds on top.
Mm-hmm.
Moles are really, you know, insectivores. They really don't eat the bulbs. So it's really not the moles that are a problem. The only might be a problem with the moles is that they sort of open the soil and bulbs might dry out. The problem is that sometimes voles might use those same tunnels. So if it's just moles, I really wouldn't worry about it too much because they're not bulb eaters. They eat earthworms and bugs and all kinds of other things, and they really don't eat bulbs. But the other things, voles might be an issue. So I would not give up on them. I guess that's the good thing.
Wait to see what comes up next spring before I add some more.
Yeah, I really wouldn't worry about it too much. I mean, especially if you have stuff like daffodils. Do you have any daffodils in there?
Yeah, there's daffodils.
Daffodils I wouldn't worry about at all because most things will not touch those. They're actually poisonous, and most of all the rodents and stuff won't touch them.
So. Well, I guess we'll find out then. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. So if you wanted to plant spring flowering bulbs, is it still okay to do that now?
I really think the ground temperature, normally we would say it's probably getting pretty late, but it's been so warm that the ground temperature is still fairly warm, and so I wouldn't have a problem planting things now. And the good news is a lot of places have them on sale.
Yeah.
So if you can get out there and plant them, you know, it sounds like this weekend will be fine. Wouldn't wait too much later. And actually, generally, we say is you could actually plant them as long as the ground isn't frozen. But it's not the best thing for the bulbs, but can certainly be done.
Okay. To Urbana, next, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a good idea to cut leaves off of hosta this time of year, or should you leave them till spring and rake them off?
It's really kind of up to you. I kind of like to get them out of there, especially since we're starting to have a few disease problems in hostas. This year I noticed they actually had a nice fall color. I don't know if you noticed that with yours. They don't always turn so pretty, but they're very yellow and very beautiful.
Really are. Yeah,
they're really pretty right now. So I think I would wait until they sort of brown up a little bit more. And then I like to go ahead and just remove that for now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. And to another Urbana person. This is line number 3. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm on a cell phone, so I hope you can hear me all right.
We hear you just fine.
Okay. I have grown up with lilies of the valleys in my mom's yard, and I never noticed. But this year, I noticed that they have red berries.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked a bunch of them, and I have another place where in my yard now I'd like to put them. Can I just toss them on the ground and expect a nice spread of lily of the valley?
Yeah, you certainly can go ahead and plant them. You know, they're going to – I'd still sort of put them in the ground a little bit. They won't flower very well that first couple of years. It's going to take them a while before they get bigger. And so usually we propagate them by the little rhizomes. Digging those up and stuff. But there's no reason why you can't go ahead and use the berries. Just realize that you're not going to get a big show for a couple of years. And don't eat them. That's the other thing.
No.
I'm sure you're not used to grazing your garden, but just be on the safe side. Don't eat them. They're poisonous.
Yeah.
And so.
They are poisonous.
Yeah.
Well, no wonder my mom kept me away from them.
Yeah, there you go.
She always told me that red berries, you shouldn't eat anything red berries, but then she fed me cherries, so I never know.
Parents, Moms. They tell you these things that they're so confusing.
They are. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
All right, thanks for the call. We'll keep going here. The next person in line is in Peoria, line number 4, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I want to know what to do about an infestation of what I've been told is garlic mustard in the backyard, and it's coming up the hill, and it's going to be in the front yard if I don't stop it.
Yeah. It does it look kind of like a violet leaf, only it's a little bit more crinkled? Okay.
Yes.
And it definitely smells like garlic when you pull it?
Well, my husband agrees it does.
Okay. Then it probably is garlic mustard.
Yes.
And garlic mustard is a severe problem. Not only, I'm noticing it more and more in home landscapes, but it has been a big problem in wild areas for a long time now, in woodland areas.
Well, we're close to the park.
Oh, well, then
it didn't happen before this year, so I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, a couple of things with garlic mustard. It is a biennial, so the first year it forms these rosette of leaves.
Yeah.
And then the second year it sends up a big flower stalk, a very tall flower stalk with these tiny little white flowers on it, and then it produces lots and lots and lots and lots of seeds. So the big thing is do not let it go to seed. Do not let it go to seed. No matter what, don't let it go to seed. So what you can do now is, the good news is it actually stays green a long time. I've seen it green through December, so you still know where it is. So, and it digs up very easy. It actually pulls up very easy.
Yes, but I have an enormous amount.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how you feel about herbicides. The one thing is because it stays green for so long, and actually you can use herbicides on it, such as Roundup, but make sure there's nothing else in there that you want to keep. You know, because
we had planted grass, of course, but this is what came up and is killing, drowning the grass.
Yeah, it just shades everything out. So if there's nothing else there that you want to keep, and as long as it's, say, above 45, 50 degrees, actually something like Roundup will work, and as long as the plant is still growing, and that stuff grows
that
for a long time.
This time of year, you think?
Yeah, and I wouldn't wait much later, but you certainly could do it now.
I could do the whole backyard today.
As long as it's not too windy, and you can make sure that you keep the spray off of other plants. Sure. Yeah, today is, supposed to get 75. It'd be perfect.
So other than Roundup, that's it, you think?
Well, you certainly could use some of the other broadleaf weed killers, such as the 2,4-D type products that we use for, dandelions and those kinds of things. Oh. You certainly could use those, too, if you feel like there is some grass there that you want to keep and just kill off the garlic mustard.
Okay, well.
Yeah, good luck. It's a big problem, but it's better to start now.
It has become a big shock, too.
Yeah, I'll bet.
What's happening.
I'll bet.
Thank you.
Uh-huh,
thanks
good
for
luck.
The call.
Bye.
It's really something that I know has, as you say, even in residential areas and in home landscapes, becoming an increasing problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, it's the kind of thing where once I realized what it was, I started looking around my neighbor's yards, my neighborhood. It's every place.
Yeah. It's very surprising. It was one of those things that just within the last couple of years, I've seen it at home landscapes. And the problem is it does, because one plant will produce so many seeds, it doesn't take very long for it to really take off. So garlic mustard is definitely one one of those. Don't let it go to seed. You know, deal with it now. If you've got a problem with it, deal with it now.
Yeah, and it's pretty easy to recognize because your description was really good with the leaf, and it does produce this white, tall stalk with white flowers in the springtime, and it's easy to tell what it is. And at that point, it's also really easy to yank it out. And I try to any place I see it, I try to yank it out.
And it, even throughout the year, it has that garlicky smell to the leaf. So if you crush the leaf, you can usually still smell that garlicky taste. I've had a few people say that they do use it in salads, so maybe we just need to think of more recipes for garlic mustard.
Was that something that was actually a culinary?
Yes, it was brought in as what's called a pot herb, where you'd actually would cook with it and use it. And unfortunately, it wasn't a very good neighbor.
Got away.
Yeah.
All right. Our guest this morning here in this part of Focus 580, Sandy Mason, horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. She's here every month, always on a Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care. And if you have questions about things that grow in the home landscape, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Whiteheath. This is line number one. Hello.
Hi. I have a Rose of Sharon tree, a small one that I have in a pot. And I would like to keep it in the pot. It's in a good size pot, but do you think that that's going to freeze it out, or if I put a bunch of insulation around it or something, or what?
When you say good size pot, what are we talking? 5 gallon, 10 gallon?
Oh, probably 10 gallon.
So yeah, so it is a pretty good size pot. It is it like a plastic pot or something that can freeze?
Yeah, it's plastic, and then I put it inside a big, huge pot.
Oh, so there's another pot outside of it, then?
Well, there is. We took it out of that pot, but we can put it back in and put maybe some insulation or something.
Yeah, I think it's good that you have it in a big pot. It's also good. Roses, Sharon, are really tough plants. So
they can
tolerate a lot of abuse.
Okay.
But probably one of the best things to do, if you could actually just put it in a carport area or someplace where it wouldn't get quite the extremes in temperature, but yet it would still be cold.
Sure.
And yet would still get light and those kind of areas. So maybe have a certain part of your garage where you could put it. That would be fine. If you're going to have to leave it outside, then I definitely would put like a layer of, you know, even if you just took chicken wire and then made like a foot or so away from the pot and then filled that with leaves somehow so you can sort of protect that pot. Because the biggest problem is that the soil will freeze and thaw, and that's what really hurts the plant.
Okay.
So you want to keep it cold. Once it goes cold, you want it to stay cold.
Can I leave it dry then?
I wouldn't make it super dry. Now, I would make sure it still has a little moisture in it.
Uh-huh.
And then I would just every once in a while you might check it. I wouldn't let it go bone dry, but I would definitely keep it on the dry side. So you might water it like once a month or something.
Okay. All right. Because I was concerned about it. And they it said to plant it in the ground, but I wanted to keep it in this great big pot.
Sure.
Okay. And you were talking about Roundup, too. I have a lot of weeds in my pine needles that for some reason went crazy this year, and I'd like to get rid of them. I don't want any green stuff in those pine needles. Can I use that Roundup in that?
As long as there's nothing there that you want to keep, and as long as it's not too windy, those kinds of conditions, and just keep it
careful when I apply it.
Right, keep it off any plants that you want to keep, those kinds of things.
And it has to be applied when it's warmer, you said.
Right, the plant has to be actively growing, and that's the problem. So today is good because it's a warmer day.
All right, good. Thanks a lot.
Bye. All right, thank you. On to Champagne. This is the next caller. Champagne, line two. Hello.
Hi. I was recently given a bunch of black-eyed Susans that someone had dug up to replant, and I was wondering if it's too late to plant them now, or should I just overwinter them, like covered with leaves and in the pots they're in, and then plant them in the spring.
I would go ahead and plant them. If you know where you want them to be, I would go ahead and plant them. Get them in the ground. And that's really your best bet in the long run is just to get them in the ground. That's the best insulation there is to plant them.
And if there's some that I might want to move in the spring, I could move them again if I waited a little while in
the
spring.
Sure.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Okay. And thank you. And to Danville, this is the next person here. Danville, line number three. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Last April at an Arbor Day sale, I bought some little whips, and I planted them right away. But weren't labeled, and I put the Cherokee Chief Dogwood where the Nyssa sylvatica I intended to go. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm wondering, they have just lost their leaves within the last 10 days. Mm-hmm. Should I move those or exchange those now, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. wait until early spring?
I think I'd wait on with those. I think I'd wait till spring.
And until we're talking late March?
Late March, early April would be just fine. I think in the long run, those would be best for you. And they shouldn't be hard to move if they'd only been there for a year.
Yes, less than that.
Thank you. Should be fine.
All right. Well, we have plenty of lines open here and time if you have questions about things that grow in the home landscape, lawn and garden care, houseplants. We can do that too. Sandy Mason is here. And all you have to do is give us a call, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. What about now, periodically, I think particularly the last couple of times, we've talked about end of growing season lawn care and whether it indeed it is okay or not too late to still be thinking about fertilizing mm-hmm. and also weed control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, normally we would say this is probably too late for weed control, but again, we're back into that thing where it's, you know, that's the ground temperature is still up there, the air temperature even today, 75 degrees. So if you really had a particular weed that you really felt like you wanted to deal with, it might not be too late, and it's certainly not too late to fertilize, because normally our last fertilization is done usually around Thanksgiving time, so we're about at that same time. And usually the last mowing is at that time. I know a lot of people really felt like they wish they could put their lawnmower away, but you really don't want the grass to get really tall going into winter. Anytime it sort of lays over on itself, then you're more apt to get disease problems. Mm-hmm. So you really don't want it to, certainly don't want it more than 3 inches tall. So you may have to do that one more mowing. So don't put the lawnmower away just yet.
Well, I'm still using mine to chop up leaves because there are a lot of places where I don't mess around with raking, but you also don't want the leaves to be sitting there.
Right.
And that's good. You know, it adds a little something. So I have a mulching mower, so I just
run. And there's no problem with dealing with leaves that way. As long as you don't have a lot of them, there's no problem with doing it that way.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, let's see. We have some more folks to talk to. Toledo, line number one. That's next. Hello.
Hello. My question was about crepe myrtle. We've down in Memphis last summer, and my wife fell in love with them. We ended up buying 5 different plants and bringing them home. They're all 0 or 10 below 0 and are supposed to survive our colder weather.
Mm-hmm.
But the question I had for you was how much insulation, how much protection would you give them for the winter?
Mm-hmm. So you've already planted them in the ground?
Yes, they are.
They're in the ground. Okay. And probably the one thing with crepe myrtles is I've even seen them, even though the tops sometimes die down, they still will come back up from the roots. So don't give up on them, I guess is the thing I'm saying. Even in the springtime, it seems like a lot of the top part has died. They kind of act like butterfly bushes. I don't know if you're familiar with those, where they get kind of woody, but then they kind of sometimes they die close to the ground. I would really think I'd certainly wait until probably end of November, 1st of December, and just let them go cold. Let the ground temperatures decrease and let them get used to being dormant. And then I would really think about putting some shredded leaves, something along those lines over them just to make sure that, hopefully try to mulch them as best you can. And I'd put probably 5 or 6 inches at least of shredded leaves on top of them.
Okay, very good. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good luck.
All right. And Urbana is next. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. As you were talking about leaf raking, I'm thinking about the number of people I've heard complaining about having to rake leaves. And my new line is, be thankful you have a yard. and
trees. Be thankful you have trees.
Yeah, I just think about all the people who've lost their homes. And I think it's really important to think about, I don't have to be inside in an exercise club. I'm outside getting some exercise. I'm listening to the birds. And it's another pitch for getting rid of these leaf blowers. The sound of them with their high whine drives me bananas. I can see where they might be useful in a few places, but
I know that's tough.
It's why not get a little bit of this is a chance to move our bodies around. I have 2 questions. One is I had bought myself a little pH meter because I'm not organized to send my soil in to get it tested, and I had put some
wood ashes in my compost heap, but I think I've probably thrown my BH too far toward the basic side.
Mm-hmm.
Do the electronic pH meters actually work? I just tried it once, and I didn't have the patience right then to make sure I was doing it right, and shoved away, and now it has resurfaced.
Yeah. The one thing with the pH meters, and it really with the, whether you're doing the paper ones or whatever, it definitely, the more you spend, the better the equipment and the better the results. So that's why we generally recommend that people do send them in a soil test labs, because they have much better equipment than what we're ever going to buy. So you can probably get a pretty good range, I would say, but you're definitely, you know, if it says 7.5, I would still probably give it a range of at least one or two, either on each side. You know, you're just giving it a range. I wouldn't just automatically assume that it truly is 7.5, I guess is my point, which is fine, because most of the time our plants, you know, if you're running about 7, might be a little high, but it's not that bad. Most of our plants probably would like it a little bit more acidic, like at 6.5, but, you know, they'll certainly take it up to 7.5. And you start getting up to 8, 8.5, then you're probably talking about a little bit too sweet, too alkaline. So
but, you put some sulfur in with the soil, and if you do have it too alkaline? Is that what you do?
Right. Now you're not testing the compost. You're actually testing the soil.
Well,
or
I empty the compost out once a year and mix it in with the soil.
Okay.
So it's mixed in.
So there'd be some buffering by the fact that you're adding soil to this compost. So there's certainly some buffering there anyway.
Right.
So unless you're, and I would say more than likely, unless you're growing something like blueberries or, you know, something that really needs an acidic soil, rhododendrons, azaleas, those kinds of things, I probably wouldn't worry about it too much. If it's coming up at 7, 7.5, I probably wouldn't worry about it too terribly much. You start getting up to 8, 8.5, and then I'd probably be more concerned.
Oh, I'll check it again. But I put a lot of wood ash in. We have a wood stove, and I burn a lot of wood in the wintertime. So I have a lot of wood ash, and I hate to just throw it in the trash. I'd rather spread it around and take advantage of the minerals that are there.
Sure. And any time you can sort of spread that out into a larger area, then that's going to help the soil to buffer whatever pH might be within the compost.
Well, one area where I tend to put compost frequently, I have a rose bush, and it's got, part of it has sort of yellowed leaves, and I also had some wild lilies that had yellowed leaves this summer, and I added fertilizer, and that seems to help the rose bush a little bit, but now I see it's got one side of it has yellowed leaves again. So I'm just wondering when I should be doing that, which is my second question, which may be related to the first question. Should I fertilize it now?
The roses or the...
Yeah, it's blooming.
Yeah, generally we say at this point, I really wouldn't fertilize them at this point, because you really want them to go dormant. You want them to get used to, you know, it's time to slow down kind of thing. And I would probably wait till the 1st of April or so to think about fertilizing them.
Okay, well, I was thinking about whether the same thing applied to roses as applied to the grass. So that's why I'm asking the question. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Sure.
Midway through here, this part of Focus 580 with Sandeep Mason. She is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she's here monthly. On a Tuesday, we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. And if you have questions, I shall know she will do her best to help you out. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Paris is the next caller. Line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Sandy, I got a question about some elephant ears that I'm wanting to put up for the winter. I kind of experimented last year and left some in the pots, and they seem to do okay. And I'm trying it with geraniums, and I've tried it in the past but had very mixed luck. Sometimes they do okay and sometimes they don't. And I know back in the old days, grandmas used to keep their geraniums from one year to the next, you know, and that's how they got them across the prairie and everything. So I was wondering if you could give me any pointers on storing geraniums better for the winter, and if that's a good idea with the elephant ears.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, and I'll listen on the air.
Sure. Yeah, you know, it is one of those things. We hate to see things just completely get frosted, and that's the end of things. And plus, you know, they get bigger every year, especially elephant ears. It's kind of a big bulb-like thing. Mm-hmm. And generally what I've done is just left them in the pots, which is just fine. You can do that, or you can actually take them out of the pot. I'd still probably put them in, like, peat moss or something, sort of try to protect them, and then put them in a cool spot, maybe where, hopefully where it's about 55 degrees or so. You just don't want it to be too hot or too cool. Geraniums are a little bit different. They don't have quite as big a root system, but they certainly are very tolerant of abuse. I've I've decided. Those are another one of those you can bring them on and just treat them like houseplants. They don't have to go dormant, even though they kind of do it on their own because of the low light. But there's no reason why you can't bring them in and use them as houseplants if you like. You can also bring them in the if you've got a basement area or something and just want to sort of, you know, let them hang on. They have a fairly succulent stem, and you can sort of bring them in the basement. They're going to drop all their leaves. They're going to look horrible. I would water them periodically. Don't have them too wet, but certainly not bone dry. So maybe like every couple weeks you might give them a little bit of water. So you just want them to hang on, just to have that stem stay green. They're going to look horrible. Don't worry about it. That's fine. So that'd certainly be the other way. I've had people say that they've actually done it where they dig them up, the geraniums, and actually put them in paper bags and over and winter them that way. Mm. I would say you probably have about, if you're lucky, you might have a 50% survival rate on that. So if you had a bunch of them and you just didn't want to deal with a bunch of pots, you could certainly do it that way too. So
I've become a big fan of the geranium. I think it's a really nice plant. And among the things that I like about geranium is bunnies don't like them.
Do they really?
Well,
don't
that's my experience is that rabbits will not bother them.
And you should know, because it seems like every bunny in the world comes
bunnies.
To your house. So.
I hate those bunnies. Killed a rabbit. No. No, I have. And I think
well,
that they're a really nice plant, and they really seem to be very hardy and do well all through the summer and make flowers. And I still got geraniums blooming in my front yard.
Isn't it amazing?
Now, if they could just come up with some different colors. That's, you know.
Yeah.
You got your pink, you got your red,
salmon.
You got your white.
Salmon
you
kind
get that
of thing
one too,
going
yeah.
on. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah
now,
a blue geranium.
A blue geranium, this would be good. Genetic engineering. We'll work on that.
It's a tough one.
Let's see where we're going to go next. Berwin is the next caller here. Line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I had a question about the endless summer hydrangea. My son gave me one a couple of years ago. I've had it out for two seasons. And the something loves it, but it isn't growing well because it's getting eaten. And I put it in a part shade situation. I was just wondering if you knew what kind of bugs attack, and if you do, what could I use to kill them? I put it in a pot, and I'm going to keep it over winter in the house or on the back porch because I won't. It hasn't grown any bigger than it was when I got it.
Okay, and so there's something actually eating the leaves or eating
the
stems?
Yeah, they're eating the leaves.
Well, at this point, I'm not sure what it, you know, it's too late for insects for the most part.
Well, now, yeah, because I've had it in for a while, but all season, I mean, it'll grow new leaves and then the old ones will get eaten and it just doesn't get very far.
Well, Japanese beetles like them, but those that you'd normally see them on.
I don't
on the leaves.
I really don't see anything.
I'm not sure what else. There's certainly some other beetles that might be. There's the errant caterpillar here and there that might bother them. But Japanese beetles are the only one that I can think of that really seems
no,
to
no, beetles?
Enjoy them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know.
Well, I think the one thing I would tell you is that unless you have a good spot, realize that they have to go dormant. They have to go through a cold period. So
yeah, they did last winter.
Okay, so you can't leave them indoors and not let them go through a cold period is my point.
Yeah, well, my back porch gets down to freezing.
Okay.
I think that'll be okay.
Okay, and my thought is that you're always better off having them in the ground rather than having them in pots, but
I've tried two different locations. I know they're not a full sun plant, and in both locations they were attacked. I mean, it just didn't do well at all. I didn't think hydrangeas had very many bugs that ate them.
Well, certainly with the leaves, certainly Japanese beetles and stuff. So, at any rate, but that's fine if you want to go ahead and do it that way. But if you could find that spot, you know, they need well-drained soil, but they like it moist soil. You know, adding peat moss compost, those kinds of things to the planting hole will help those. They're water lovers is the big thing.
Oh,
you know?
Are they?
Yeah, they like a lot. They don't like to dry out, but they don't like to be too wet. So they're
maybe that's part of the problem.
Yeah, if they're especially this past summer, if they dried out very much, then they certainly, I'm sure, felt the stress of it.
Yeah. Well, I'll just have to try some kind of an insecticide.
Okay. Good luck.
Thanks a lot. Uh-huh.
Thank you. To next champagne, line number one. Hello.
Hi, Sandy and David. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about chrysanthemums. I am not fond at all of these big cushion mums. Mm-hmm. I want something that will come back year after year and not such a full plant, and I want to know what to ask for. When do I get it? When do I put it in the ground?
Mm-hmm. When you say not such a full plant, as in the flowers not as big?
The mums, they're like big pillows of flowers around the yard, and they don't come back year after year. I like something with a little bit of length on it, something I can pick. And is there...
Well, with mums, depending on how you treat them, you know, a lot of times, especially in the garden centers, is if they've pinched them and stuff so that they're very full, lots of flowers and not the long stems. How they have treated them gives them those really short stems and all that stuff because they assume everybody wants just lots and lots of flowers and not necessarily.
Right.
So part of it is how they're grown.
So can I buy chrysanthemums in the spring? And put them in the ground and
Pinch
them back a little bit until the length of what I want.
Usually in the springtime, you won't see these big, huge plants. You'll see these 3.5-inch pots of mums, and there's no reason. And a lot of times they're already in bloom. They forced them into bloom, so you know what color they are. There's no reason. And actually, I've had a lot of people say they have better luck getting them through the winter if they actually do plant them in the spring.
Oh, all right. And they won't turn into these big pillows of flowers.
Well, depending on how you treat them. I'd probably, sounds like from what you're looking at, maybe you're wanting maybe some of the smaller flowers, the little pom-poms. You know, I'd really look at the size of the flower, that kind of thing. We have one out at the Idea Garden, the Master Gardener Idea Garden there in Urbana that I just fell in love with. It's called Sheffield Pink.
Okay.
And it's just big kind of pink daisy type, but it has long stems. Nice.
Oh, good.
And it's
I'll stop out there today.
Yeah. It's on the north side of the border and look at that and see what you... And it bloomed very late.
What's the name of it?
It's called Sheffield Pink.
All right. Thanks so much.
Sure. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye. Well, again, we have plenty of time for other questions. I'd like to call in here, talk with Sandy Mason, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, we talked a little bit about the fact that since it is warm, maybe there are some things that you could do that you would ordinarily, in an ordinary year, say it was a little late. That is, you could still be planting bulbs, although it's like we've said, there are some people that said as long as they could get out there with a pick and break up the dirt, they would plant bulbs.
People use drills to go through the frozen.
Are there other things that you think right now at this particular time, there are things you would suggest that people be thinking about paying attention to?
Yeah, I think probably one of the things is I wouldn't necessarily do a whole lot of pruning on trees and shrubs, but I would really start thinking about, you know, the overall look of the plants. You know, right now, you know, even write down a few things. I know I'm not always that great at it, but, you know, write down stuff as in, you know, this did really well, this didn't do real well, because I always think I'm going to remember it in the spring and then I never do. Yeah. So, you know, writing some things down, I think, can help immensely. You might even think about maybe you have daffodils that you'd really like to divide. You know, maybe they've had them there for a number of years and you've decided that, boy, they just don't bloom as well as they used to. I want to divide them. If you can sort of figure out where they are, and you certainly could go ahead and divide them now. One of the tricks that I kind of learned, and it works out really well, is to get golf tees. And you can get either colored golf tees or just the plain old brown ones, and actually stick those in the ground around where the bulbs are, because they're really hard to figure out. You think you'll remember, but then you always end up skewering a few of them. But then from then on, you'll know kind of the perimeter of where those bulbs are, and they're not noticeable at all. So just stick those little golf tees in there, and then when your spouse wonders where the golf tees went, then... You'll just say, huh, I don't know.
I don't know. It's a funny thing. It could have been the golf elves. Let's see. Here's somebody I'll talk with on line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just heard a lady talking about mums. She wanted some hardy type.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, I don't know what you call them, but I have some what my sister called old-fashioned mums. Somebody gave them to her. And about 15 years ago, she gave me a start. And then I have given... literally dozens of starts to other people. You cannot kill them. and they grow real lanky unless you trim them down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're a bronze color. They bloom late in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And if that lady, I'll give my phone number off the line, if that lady would want any, I'd be happy to pull some up for her.
Well, aren't you nice?
Okay.
Are the flowers fairly small?
No, I have a bouquet of them right here in my kitchen right now. They're about they're fairly small. They're about an inch and a half across.
It seems like those smaller ones, like the little pom-poms, tend to be a little bit more hardy from what I notice. And I think you've hit on exactly on it. Find somebody who has a mom who's been living year after year after year, and I think that's a great way of knowing that it truly will be hardy for you.
They're not real colorful. They're bronze color.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but I think they're great because they don't die.
You're not, yeah, really. Yeah, not dying is a good attribute for a plant.
Anyway, I'll if somebody wants to take my phone number off the line.
We can put you back on hold, and the fellow who answered the phone the first time around can get the number, and that's very. That's very kind.
How generous.
Yeah. I have some mums, and I guess my problem is that even though periodically through the summer I do pinch them back, they still, I would like to have the pillows of flowers, but mine do get kind of, they get really leggy. And then they just kind of flop over. And next year I'm thinking, well, maybe I'll just get some plant supports and put them around there to help at least help them stand up a little bit more.
How early do you pinch them back normally in the season?
Well, I think that I start, start fairly early. And then I think I thought it said that after the 4th of July or something like that, you're supposed to stop.
Yeah, generally that's what we say. But you might pinch them four or five, you know, six times, you know, before that. So, you know, when they're very small, as in 3 or 4 inches tall, that would be my first time to pinch them off. And you can even just get hedge trimmers and just, you know, off with their heads kind of thing. And then as they get a couple more inches of growth on them and then pinch them again. And so you just keep sort of pinching them after they get about 2 inches of growth or so.
Okay.
And that's a good way to get them much more compact and not do quite the floppy thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe that's the thing. Maybe I should it be actually starting with the pinching a little bit earlier.
That would definitely help.
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. Urbana is up next. Line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a question about, I have a ton of leaves and, I have a lot of, I usually shred them or mulch them and put in my compost, but my bins are overflowing. I'm wondering, can I just spread those leaves over my garden or would they be too acid or what?
Is this over a vegetable garden or a flower garden?
Vegetable garden.
Oh, no, there's no reason why you can't put them over your garden.
And how thick can I put them?
You know, as far as how thick, the biggest thing is, you know, how much do you want to dig into or dig through next spring?
Because
they're not, you know, they'll certainly drop, especially if you shred them.
Yeah.
You can put a lot of leaves because, you know, shredding really, really reduces the volume immensely. So I would have no problem putting 4 or 5 inches. You start getting much more than that, then it gets a little bit harder. It still can certainly be done, but it gets a little bit harder to till them in or work them in the next spring.
Wonderful, because I have a terrible time getting rid of all those leaves.
Oh, it's great. And your garden will love it.
Oh, thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. About 10, 15 minutes left here. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I have the issue like with the earlier caller who said she had a wood stove, and we do too in our house, and I generally do the same thing, take the ash out and just kind of here and there sprinkle it out, and I do wonder, though, and I would try not to put too much in any one spot,
but
how much you would have to... How easy would it get to the point where you were putting too much out and it would end up screwing up the pH of the soil?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say. But I think as long as you're spreading it out the way you are, the soil really is an amazing stuff. And it does a really good job of sort of buffering really dramatic changes when it comes to pH and those kind of things. And with most of our plants, they're not going to care.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely would never put them around anything that likes an acidic soil. So don't put them anywhere near rhododendrons, blueberries, all those kinds of things. And if you're not putting more than, say, a quarter inch or so at any one time, you're probably not going to change the pH that much. It might be something where periodically you might, you know, every 5 years or so, you might want to take a soil test and take it to a lab and see if something really is changing. But there's a certain amount of nutrients actually in wood ash. So it's generally not a big issue. It's probably more that... You know, if you're dumping them in this exact same spot every single time, then you're going to have issues.
Is there anything that likes wood ash?
Actually, you know, some of the plants, you know, there are some plants that like a more alkaline soil, things like baby's breath and lavender, and some of those like a more alkaline soil. So if you have any of those, that might be something you'd think
lavender,
about.
Yeah, lavender. I actually have some of that.
There you go. Well, it actually likes that.
Oh, okay. That's going to get a ton of wood ash, that lavender.
Uh-oh.
Let's talk with Urbana, caller next, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
I have Siberian iris, and I cannot get them to bloom, and I've planted them in different spots around the garden, from shade to sunshine, and what am I doing wrong?
You know, I don't. Is this a plant you had for a long time, or
yes?
Mm-hmm. Have you divided them even?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. You know, I really need to ask around myself, to be honest with you. I've had a couple people tell me this, and I noticed it myself, where it seemed to be a plant that just went into decline, and it, no matter where I put it, hot, you know, whether it was moist or not, because I thought it maybe was getting enough moisture. And so I'm not sure exactly what's going on with those, to be honest with you.
Maybe I just ought to pull them out.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to matter, but I need, you know, keep listening. This encourages me to check it out for next time. So in December, I'll let you know what
okay.
I come up with.
Thanks, Sandy.
Sure.
All right. Thank
Bye.
You. And to line number two, this is also an Urbana listener. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a white ginger plant that I put out every spring, or I usually don't get afraid. I don't get it out till about the end of May, usually. And then I dig it up in the fall and bring it in, or bring in the roots, the tubers, and put them in peat moss
mm-hmm.
over winter. Every year when I dig them up, I wonder, you know, there are lots of little roots hanging from the tubers,
mm-hmm.
kind of dangling on there. I have always left them on. Are they necessary, or could I just cut those off and assume that the tubers themselves will produce roots in the spring?
Yeah, as far as I know and what I've seen growing them is that you really don't need those. Those are just more if you want to propagate more. Those would be ones you could give to your friends or if you want more plants, that kind of thing. But it really isn't necessary to keep them if you're trying to reduce the size of the roots.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, as I say, you know, there's a kind of a thick tuber that mm-hmm. comes along, and the new sprouts come out of that.
Mm-hmm. Right, so there's really no reason to have all those other ones, but
yeah.
it's just strictly if you want more plants or that kind of thing. So it's up to you.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right, sure.
Thank Bye. You. Well, just real quick, we touched on the subject of pruning. And now it could be the thing that people are kind of thinking about, particularly if we have plants now. When the leaves come off, now you're really starting to mm-hmm. see the structure.
Mm-hmm.
And you're starting to think to yourself, well, it might be good to deal with some crossing branches or you know, whatever. And, of course, the thing is that you don't want to prune before the plant really becomes dormant because you don't want to encourage new growth if it's suddenly going to then get shocked by
mm-hmm.
the cold.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point could you actually do it? Can you actually do pruning yet this year, but you would just say to people, wait? Or would you just say, wait till next spring?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that we get at that point where if I knew what the overall temperature was going to be for the winter, I could tell you one way or the other. But we don't really know. Uh-huh. I mean, we really don't. It could be very cold. And so generally, you don't want to do a lot of that stuff if there's still chance of really cold weather. So generally, that's why we say, you know, wait until, you know, latter part of February, March. You know, you certainly don't have to wait until April or May. You certainly can do it early in the season, but we'd like to get through that really cold stuff first before we start doing a whole lot of pruning.
Okay. So maybe better wait till March.
It really, you know, if you had some light pruning, I'd never worry too much about it. If you had some really light pruning, as in some branch keeps hitting you in the head or something like that, you know, I would just go ahead and remove it, you know. But if you're going to do major pruning where you're really taking off maybe a third of the plant, or I'd really think long and hard and wait until February, March.
Okay. To someone here in Champaign on cell phone, line one. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a number of hardy mums, and a couple of years ago I transplanted some of them to kind of thin out the area where they are. But I've got some fairly large plants that I'm wondering about can I divide those hardy mums, and when's the best time to do that?
You certainly can divide them. We're getting sort of that into late. If we knew what the weather was going to be, then you'd probably have no problem dividing them now. I think as late as it is, I think I'd probably wait until spring, probably more like April, May,
okay.
you know, when they first start to sprout up a little bit. And they divide
Excellent.
Very easily. Just put a spade through them and just very easy to divide at that point.
Real good. Thanks a lot for your help.
Good luck.
All right, thank you. All the questions welcome. We certainly have time for some more. A good 5-6 minutes left on the program. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Anything that's going on? Any event kind of things you want to talk
well,
about?
Well, it's that time of year where we always have a few things going on. Probably the biggest thing now is a Master Gardener program. So if people are interested, for most of the counties, this is the time when we take applications. So, check with your local extension office and see about their Master Gardener program. And most of the classes, certainly in Illinois, usually start in January. It may be a little bit different for Indiana, but check with your extension office and see what's going on. It's normally listed either under your university or under your county name. And it really is a great program for a lot of the stuff that we do when it comes to learning about gardening and just the social aspect of, hanging out with other gardeners. And just like the one lady, giving up her part of her mom plant, that's what gardening is all about. It's sort of sharing information, sharing plants. So if you have any interest in that, it's really Master Gardener program, I think people will really enjoy it. Training is generally during the day, so there may be some issues there for people. But here in Champaign County, we offer it online as well. So just check with your extension office and get into the Master Gardener program. I think people will enjoy it.
Okay, very good. Here's someone else on a cell phone, line number one. Hello.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You may have covered this in some program in the past, and I wasn't listening. But when you mentioned pruning, it made me think to perhaps give you a call. I have some lilac bushes that I'd like to move. They're essentially 4 feet tall or so, and probably a few inches around at the base. Is this an appropriate time to move them, or should I wait till spring?
Yeah, I think I would wait till spring. And they're not the easiest things in the world to move if they've been in there for any period of time. Have they been in there for a while? It sounds like maybe they
have. A few years. In fact, that's why I have to move them, because I never thought they'd get this big when I put them.
Yeah.
I would think that they would have to be cut back when they're moved. And that's what made me think about the pruning issue, because
right.
I moved them. I'd probably have to cut them back initially to help them get their root growth. And doesn't seem to me like you're advocating any kind of pruning at this time.
Well, it'd be one of those things. I would probably wait till spring, and you don't necessarily, for the plant's health, you don't have to prune them back. I mean, you really don't. It's probably more for your sake, just the, sheer weight and, trying to maneuver these things around. Sometimes it's easier to prune them. But realize if you're going to do it in the spring, you're going to sacrifice your flowers for that season.
Right.
If you do it then. Otherwise,
I'll have to take the wrath of my spouse at that point.
What? No flowers? You have to buy her some at that point. But for the plant's health, it'd probably be better to do it like in April and May. You probably could do just fine, I would say, if you wanted to wait until after they bloom and then move them.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And as long as you make sure that they stay well watered and all that kind of stuff, you probably won't have any problem, even though then at that point we're really starting to get into June and, depending on when they flower.
All right. Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm. I think that's helped me out.
Very
sure.
good. Thank you.
Your program.
Thank you. I think the caller makes me think about that. One of the things that with gardening it can sometimes be can kind of get you is you buy a plant and you look at it and you think that's nice and you put it in the ground, but you don't really know 2, 3, 4 years what's going to happen with that. Mm-hmm. And things do grow. Mm-hmm. And you put them in one place and you get a nice arrangement and things are really fine. And then stuff gets out of control. And then later on you think maybe that wasn't the right place, or you think, well, okay, it was the right place for the first couple of years, but now it just doesn't, it doesn't work.
Right. We seem to think that the labels aren't right, I think, for one thing. It's that, this tiny little plant, there's no way it'll get 50 feet tall. Well, usually the labels are right. And I would say most of the time the labels err on the low side.
Yeah.
Especially with here in Illinois, with our really good soils, generally high fertility soils, I would say almost bet that it's going to get taller than what the label says. And because generally that's what I've seen. So really plan on that. The good news is there are a lot in the landscape world. There are more and more plants that are smaller, if you're looking for smaller shrubs, those kinds of things. Or realize that maybe every 3 or 4 years you're going to have to cut it down and really sort of manage it by pruning it periodically. But the biggest thing is that really the minute you think it's getting too tall for that area, then deal with it right then. Don't wait 5 more years and say, boy, I wish I would have done something, because it's so much easier to deal with it when they're young than to try to deal with it later.
Yeah, so all those things that tells you about how big the plant's going to get, suggestions about placing and spacing, do pay attention to that.
Yeah, they're not lying. They really aren't. Despite what we think, they really aren't. So I know.
Okay. Anything else you would think would be good to talk about?
You know, I think one of the things, you know, we're getting into that point where even though, you know, things like strawberries, you know, if you get strawberry plantings, I know it's really warm, but realize that for those, they do need to be covered with straw. And usually, you know, when we start getting to lower temperatures, that 20, 25 or so is the time to start thinking about covering strawberries. So certainly end of November, 1st of December, really think about that. If you've got roses maybe that are grafted, that's the same time of year you need to be thinking about actually cover them up and getting them ready for the winter. But don't do it too early. You want things to get cold. You want things to feel like they're dormant, and then put on your cover, whatever you're going to do.
Okay. And it's still, we can still do fertilize. Not, again, I know we talked about this before with the lawn. Probably late for weed control. But fertilizing, yeah, we can.
Yeah, there's no reason why you can't go ahead and fertilize your lawn. And really have found that you're better off fertilizing in November rather than that really early fertilization in, say, April. Because we recommend that you do a November application and then actually wait until May to do your first spring application.
So then will the fertilizer, will it just go in there and will it just kind of sit there and wait? Or do the plants actually take it up?
The plants actually take it up. And that's why even in this time of year, you can even use some of the quick release type of fertilizers. And they'll go ahead and take it in, and it gets them ready for winter, as in, you know, really, you know, as far as dormancy, getting them through the hard times, those kind of things. And then it will help for early green up in the spring.
Okay.
So not too
well,
late for that.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Sandy is here with us once a month, and she will be for a while. We didn't do it in the winter, and then was it just last year? We just said,
yes.
After all those
yes.
years, we said, oh, heck.
I finally twisted your arms.
Oh, yeah, like it took a lot of arm twisting. She will be back next month, so you'll have another opportunity to ask questions. And by the way, of course, gardeners, if you're within the coverage area of our television station, WILL-TV, we have a program that's on every week. It's called Illinois Gardener. Diane Nolan is the host of the show. It's on Thursdays at 7 o'clock. And there is an ever-changing cast of experts on the program. Sandy is on the show regularly, and also people from the University of Illinois and people from some of the various garden centers and landscaping businesses around central Illinois. And it's a live show, and on that program, like this, there is the opportunity to call in and ask questions. So if you're a gardener, you definitely should watch that show, Illinois Gardener, Thursdays at 7 on WILL-TV. Well, thanks very much.
Uh-huh,
we'll see you next month. Our program, Focus 580, is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. The broadcast today is also made possible by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway piano showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Are you right-handed or left-handed? Southpaws definitely are in the minority. It's estimated the percentage of lefties in humans is between 10 and 12%. Coming up today on the Afternoon Magazine in the 1 o'clock hour, a look at handedness. Celeste Quinn will be talking with journalist David Wolman. He is the author of a new book titled A Left-Hand Turn Around the World. And then later on, she'll be talking with Peter Mayle, his latest book. He's the author well-known for his book A Year in Provence. His latest book is about bread, and that's all as part of the Afternoon Magazine. Celeste Quinn is the host, and the show gets underway at noon. We'll have more Focus. We want you to stay tuned, though. First, we're going to take a break for news and update on the markets.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois. Deferred pricing contracts available this fall. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the markets from the Chicago Board of Trade. Soybeans trading both sides today, currently at the plus side.